Hello and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Ryan Costello. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John.
It is really great to have you on here, Ryan. You know, I was just thinking timing-wise, it's been just under a year since I joined the network, and I only know just little bits and pieces about you. So I'm really excited for this opportunity to interview you.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, this is maybe only the second or third time we've spoken directly to each other, voice to voice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, we'll chat on Discord, of course, but, like, to actually talk to you does not happen that often.
Yeah, and that was, like, early on, like, when we did the kind of the intro stuff. And then since then, it's like everybody's kind of busy working on their own thing. All right. So Ryan is a full-time writer for Laughing Dragon Studios, as well as a part-time RPG designer and freelancer. He founded the No Direction Network and continues to manage the network as director of logistics, while also hosting and participating in several network podcasts and blogs. So first of all, Ryan, can you tell me a little bit about the founding of the No Direction Network and kind of how much has it changed since, you know, you first started it?
So the site launched in 2007, October 30th, 2007, we launched 3.5 Private Sanctuary, which was not a great name because there's a point in it that wasn't in the URL. It was 35privatesanctuary.com. And the intention of the site was that it was going to be the place where people who did not want to change to 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, they were saying, no, I've given up on Dungeons & Dragons, new edition, we're sticking to 3.5. This is the edition we stay with forever. And so I modeled the site after my friend Justin Bell's site for G.I. Joe called General's Joe's, where he was just reviewing the new things that might be of interest to collectors. And I was thinking, yeah, all right, I'll review the hardcover books because as they get harder to come by and maybe new people will be coming into the game looking for 3.5 books, I'll be a source to be like, hey, these are the ones you should be looking for. These are the ones feel free to avoid. Because at the time, there wasn't a PRD with all of the rules everywhere. If you wanted the rules, you had to buy a physical copy of the book, which theoretically in 2007 would get more and more hard to do as the game was longer and longer out of print. The site wasn't even around for a year before it changed directions when we first heard about Pathfinder. Now, I was a Dragon magazine subscriber for... I was a reader for years, basically since I was in high school and I started in second edition Dungeons & Dragons. But I started subscribing to the magazine in the last couple of years it was being published. So I was more aware of Paizo and the content they were putting out than I realized. And so when people were saying the company that put out Dragon magazine, I'm like, you mean Wizards of the Coast? It's like, no, apparently a whole other company was licensed to put out those magazines. So I started doing research into who Paizo is, what this Pathfinder game is that they're putting out. And not only did it line up with what we were doing with the website, it was actually, it was clearly better than 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. And so now here I was, the guy that said, like, I am here for you, this fan base. This is the site for you. We are never going to change editions. We're all going to be this small but dedicated group of gamers. And I was like, I'm already leaving the game. I'm already breaking that promise. And so there was a couple of transition years where we were still putting out 3.5 content, but I was not playing 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons. I was playing Pathfinder. And eventually it broke. We released No Direction. That one came out in 2009, in September. September 15th, 2009, with a review of the core rulebook. But by that time, we'd done Pathfinder dedicated episodes of 3.5 Private Sanctuary, and already a slow transition was starting. And really, the site, once we finally accepted we're not here for 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons anymore, and we transitioned from 35privatesanctuary.com to nodirectionpodcast.com, that's when we actually became the network we are today, which just happens to be nothing like the network that I originally envisioned it being.
Now, when you started the network, you know, basically it was a website. Was it a podcast and a blog or one or the other?
When it was a podcast and it was reviews on the website. So the only written content was the reviews, and mm-hmm. each review was a single hardcover released by Wizards of the Coast for Dungeons & Dragons 3.5. And at the same time that we released the first review, well, we reviewed the first three core rulebooks at the same time, and we released the first episode of 3.5PrivateSanctuary.com. It was me and my friend Jay Dubsky, who was in my gaming group. And it was funny, me and my gaming group, we were playing 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons, and when 4th edition was announced, we all had the exact same reaction of like, no, nothing they're saying interests us. We are really into 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons. There wasn't even a debate. It was just like, yeah, we're definitely sticking to this. And so it was easy to find a co-host that was interested in doing podcasts. What I first needed to explain was what a podcast was, because again, this is 2007.
Right.
It was not a household name. And so we kind of went over the technicalities of it, but luckily Jay is a very technical-minded person and works in a computer field even to this day, and actually has had quite success in that field. So he handled a lot of the early technical stuff, but more almost like my mentor. So he taught me how to edit audio. He taught me how to set up the RSS feed, but I was still the one that had done all the technical stuff. So when Jay's career really was taken off and his passion for gaming, it's not that it was waning. It's just his interest in splitting his time between his career, playing the game, and talking about the game he's playing, it started to wane. And so that is when he transitioned away. And luckily, because he had actually taught me how to do this stuff and didn't just do it for me, I was able to pick up the editing, pick up all the technical stuff that he was doing, and continue with the website from there.
Wow. And at the time, did your fan base also make that transition, or were there still people hanging on to 3.5?
I think that the fan base basically transitioned with me. I mean, it was hard to tell. I was checking our Google Analytics is how we checked our numbers at the time. And it seemed like we were just constantly going up and up. So we never lost a core group of people. But we had a message board, a forums on the site right from the launch, because that was kind of a key component of it. It's like, I want this to be reviews, and I want this to be a place where people can go and talk and meet and interact and find local games or find fellow gamers. So I was in constant communication with the more dedicated members of our fan base. And again, this was podcasts were new. So it's not like if they didn't like what I was doing, they couldn't just go find the other 3.5 committed podcast. It was basically, how committed are they to this concept that we're dedicated to? Are they dedicated enough to that to come along with us for the transition? And since the podcast was basically talking up Pathfinder and its virtues and why we were suddenly passionate about it instead of our original game, I think it was easy for them to see where we were going and come along for the ride with us.
Now, with the podcast, and again, being pretty new back then, this was not a local audience. This was like from all over. So it wasn't like you're a Canadian. This wasn't a Canadian audience. It was like all over, right?
Right. So at the time, it was recorded, me and Jay locally. We were both sitting in the same place, record it, post it on the internet, and put it out there for the world. And I did some networking so that I was posting on the Giant in the Playground, the publishers of the Order of the Stick. I would publish whenever a new episode would come out until somebody said, like, hey, this is against our spamming rules. So I stopped that. But at least by the time I'd posted a couple of episodes there, I had built a fan base there that contributed to a lot of our early listeners. And then I joined a gaming podcast network called Spooky Outhouse. And we really were not a good fit for there. They were very much into indie games and playing a lot of different games. And the only time Dungeons & Dragons came up by name on one of the other podcasts in the network was usually in a derogatory way. But, you know, it was one of the first people that I came across that was doing a podcast network, and it seemed like a good place to network to. So I joined them. I joined RPGpodcast.com, which was a Yahoo message board. And that was a really good resource. It gave us a place that we could put our promos, our promotional, our little 30-second ads for our show. Mm-hmm. And we would get promos for other shows. And so we would do this promo exchange. That was another way that we built our early audience.
Wow. So this was around 2009 when you made the switch. When did Param come along?
Param came along in the first year or so of No Direction. So we didn't make the switch at first. We did a second podcast. And at the time, I had just gotten my teaching degree, and I was trying to get a full-time job as a teacher. All I was doing was some part-time stuff as a substitute teacher. So I had time on my hands, and I really was not interested in finding that teacher work. And especially teacher jobs, you find them in September. If you do not get the job in September, then odds are you're not getting a full-time job. Try again next year. And so it was coming around, and it's like, all right, well, this is a career path I'm on that I'm not interested in. And so I kind of doubled down on the gaming stuff that actually was my interest and passion. And I started a second podcast that I, at first, the plan was that I would rotate guest co-hosts, and I would be the consistent over all of the episodes, but I would review books or just talk Pathfinder stuff with other people in the community. And Parham was one of the first people that he was promoting Parham Spellbook, the spell cards that he is still known for to this day. I had him on the show and we hit it off. And then I was like, what if we had you back regularly for a regular segment? And so within the first 10 episodes or so, he started coming on a little more regularly. And it was him and two other co-hosts that were supposed to each have their own segment with me. And then we would start rotating around. And eventually it was just like, Parham and I have the best chemistry of me and these three co-hosts. He is the most driven. He's the one that's bringing ideas of his own to the podcast. And so he just kind of organically became the other co-host. He got more and more time on the episodes until we were finally just recording all of the segments together. And this is long before we were recording them live. So we were just fine, you know, we got a couple hours this Tuesday night. Why don't we knock out a couple of segments and then I'll edit them together and release this 3 or 4 segment episode in no direction, put it out there. And so that was what we were doing for, I forget what episode it was. But anyway, for about a year, for about the second year of No Direction's life, and then I got a full-time job teaching. And so right around, and the way he puts it is that he recorded a bunch of stuff for Gen Con, and then I fired him. But what happened was, this being August, September, I got my teaching job, and I came to him and said, look, I don't know what the future of the podcast are going to be. I don't know what my free time is like. So can we just say that for the immediate future, we're not going to be recording on the same regularity, and let's just see where the podcast goes from here. And it was right after Gen Con, because again, August, September is both Gen Con and when teachers find out they have jobs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
but it ended up, I still had time in my schedule for both the podcast and a full-time job. So I got in touch with him. I don't even think he missed an episode. I think he just thought he was fired for a couple of weeks. And that was when we were doing monthly episodes. So after a couple of weeks, we figured out how we can work the schedule again.
That's what I was going to ask you, is how frequently you were doing things. So it started off monthly then.
3.5 Private Sanctuary was weekly. No Direction was monthly.
Okay. And when did that start picking up its pace to being more frequent?
That's a good question. I don't have that date figured out, but I guess we're talking around 2011 is when we switched to both of them being every other week. And then eventually, I think when Private Sanctuary finally retired, and at that point, Alexandra Gunas and Anthony Lee were the co-hosts, and I had stepped down. Private Sanctuary went through several different co-hosts. First it was me and Jay, then it was me and Matt Belanger, who's from the same gaming group that Jay was from. When he stepped down, it was me and Kathy Dolan, again from that same gaming group, and she has been on Adventurous since the beginning, although is on hiatus right now. And then eventually it was just, I'm going to focus on No Direction. We're going to retire Private Sanctuary unless we can find people to hand it off to. Anthony Lee and Alex Agunas had just joined the network as our first full-time bloggers. And so I talked to them. They agreed. They took it over for another little bit, but I think they hosted only about 20 episodes before they retired it and started focusing on their own things as well.
Wow. So quite a bit of a transition there. And I'm surprised. I didn't realize Alex had been around that long.
Alex and Anthony were our first two bloggers. I believe Alex was the first blogger. So we've had other people join the network, but in the first 5 years or so, a lot of it was coming and going. We had a podcast that went about 20 episodes or maybe 30 episodes called The Gamer's Guide to Pathfinder. And I know it was hosted by Sean and Barry. I don't remember their full names and I don't think we are in touch anymore. And it's just kind of weird to think like, yeah, these were guys that I supported their podcast. They put out stuff for the network. And I think they just stopped one day and pod faded and we lost touch. And likewise in 2010, someone came to me and said that they were recording their local game and they wanted to put it out as a podcast. It was a 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons game. And at that point, I was already iffy about how much 3.5 I was playing. So it was like, that's perfect. We will have an influx of 3.5 content. And so it was called The World of Sexton. He put out an episode, and then he put out an episode called The Elemental Bond, episode one. And it ends up he had two separate games going on that were 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons, and he was putting both out, which I didn't realize. And then The World of Sexton episode three came out, and I was like, where's episode two? It's like, oh, well, we lost the recording. And at that point, I just scrapped the idea of actual plays. I'm like, this will never work. Mm-hmm. I wasn't super into these shows as it was. And the fact that you could just lose an episode and expect people to follow the next episode and keep up with the story and still care. And it really was just they're doing their local game group. It was not performative. It was not aware of microphones and an audience, and it wasn't great. And if the person who was behind these was listening, I hope he doesn't take that personally, because we didn't know how to make an actual play at the time. Right. And it's the reason that we retired from the idea of doing actual plays for the longest time, until after Alex and Anthony came onto the network as bloggers. That's when we started getting a lot of momentum, and we have lost very few members since then. Anthony eventually got out of Pathfinder, expanded his family, and has gotten out of the hobby. So he also got out of working for the network. Although for a little while, we were trying to find, like, maybe you do a painting blog or something that, even if you're not into Pathfinder, stick around, because we like you, we consider you one of the team. But he left. But otherwise, we've just grown. There's very few people since Anthony and Alex came on that have come and gone.
So how big is the network now? How many people total?
That is, it depends on how you calculate it. It depends on how cast members of our actual plays counted. Right. Because actual plays make up about half of our podcast output right now. So I have a list of all of our current active KD staff, and it's 27 names.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we are pushing 30. I think Parham started to get a little bit nervous when we were pushing 20. Because just he was worried about the network growing too big and him becoming unfamiliar with who some of the people are and what we're putting out. But one, I really appreciate the content. And two, around that time, I started realizing, okay, like, we need to start curating the content that we're bringing into the network then. Because most of the early growth was, here's just more bloggers. And that was easy to add. Just like, once every 2 weeks, write about 1,000 words, post it to the website, and you're good. Everyone was allowed in the back room where we would organize things. So now it's done on Discord. Previously, it was done on Slack. After we started growing and bringing in more podcasts, that's when we stopped just automatically assuming everyone's going to want to be part of the staff and in the back room. So that's when it became more invitation only. So people were contributing to the site, especially people, members of, or cast members on actual plays. But only select people from each of those actual plays was then considered a full staff member on the site, with like voting privileges and given access to areas where if we wanted insight and if we had some kind of confidential information that we had to talk about, they were allowed to see that stuff.
Oh, so right now when you're saying the staff is like nearing 30, like 27 or so, that's these people. It doesn't include the actual play people?
No, that includes the actual play people.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Let me count up
okay.
The staff on the list.
Yeah, no, I was just kind of curious about that. Yeah, so it sounds like it's grown quite a bit, and I can see where Parham would be concerned. You know, it was a very small kind of group that was working on things, and now it's gotten to be quite large. What are some of the challenges of managing such a big network?
You know what? Not that many. The network runs itself. I opportunities is basically whenever something comes up, we have to sit and talk about it. And we sometimes have philosophical differences of like, how are we are going to monetize, how much effort certain things deserve, and how we're going to take the money like we've earned from a Patreon and how we're going to spend it. But other than that, it's basically, we have faith that the people posting blogs will post it on schedule. We'll be able to keep up with it. If we notice that somebody is, they tend to not post on time, we start giving them reminders. I talk to them. I try and be as transparent as possible, being like, if you need me to just say, hey, you got a blog in 2 days, don't forget. I'm perfectly fine with that, because not everyone keeps track of their schedule in the same way. And I'd rather just gently poke somebody every couple of weeks rather than remind them after the fact and be like, it's late. It's always late. Why is it? What is going on? So it's really, it's just a matter of figuring out the idiosyncrasies of the staff and their quirks and what, who needs reminders, who needs, who could be given full, like just trusted, give full trust to be responsible and to make sure that I'm not overlooking people that, like, if you are super responsible, don't take that for granted.
Okay. So what are some of my quirks?
Oh, John, you are great. Sorry. Joy. Honestly, no, you put stuff out on time, reliably. You pre-schedule things. You've let me know ahead of time so that I could preview it in the recall knowledge section. I'm not just saying this because you're interviewing me. You're fine.
Okay. Well, I never know. I just going to do my thing and I just figure if nobody complains, it must be okay.
It's okay.
All right. Well, you know, what it sounds like a lot to me is a lot of project management kind of work where you're kind of keeping track of things and making sure things are going on schedule. What happens if you have like, for some reason, something doesn't come out? Do you just leave an opening there? Do you try to fill it? Do you push it back? Or how does that work with scheduling?
So one of the things that when I was putting in a lot of effort to make sure that we always had the content that day, it was a lot of asking people that if you know you are not going to post ahead of time, talk to us. We've got this staff of so many people and maybe somebody likes the topic of your blog and is willing to fill in. And that was just so much pressure on everyone. And I felt like I was constantly being the bad guy. And so I've just kind of loosened up and been like, fine, if people just don't want to be the ones that are constantly putting out on the same reliable schedule, I will let those people have a little more freedom, even if it means that the site doesn't get as much content. And then when we had more than one blog post per day, I was then doubling up. I was taking a reliable person and take somebody that is a little, you know, more of a free spirit and make sure they were both on the same day so that in the morning when I logged onto the site, there was a new post from that day. It hasn't been like that most of this year. And this year is obviously worth being an exception about. And I've just kind of mellowed out about that because it's not like we've lost any kind of audience because our consistency has gone down a little bit.
Well, and it seems like there's multiple blogs. Are there multiple podcasts each day or is it pretty much one a day?
It's almost one a day. So Stellar, unfortunately, has come to a close. We've had a lot of issues with recordings and then with postings. So we still have three episodes that will be edited and released before the whole show has to wrap up. So unfortunately, a couple of cast members were saying, we're having all these issues with the recordings. I don't know if I can keep keeping Tuesdays free to maybe not have anything to do that week. So Stellar, it was called the Cursed Podcast for a while. So that is one of our shows that is we're shuttering. But otherwise, every other Monday, we've got an Adventurous. Tuesday is either a Digital Divination or Legend Lore. Wednesday is presenting or nothing right now, but in the new year, actually probably by the time this episode comes out, we are moving Game Design Unboxed to Wednesdays. That was originally put on Saturdays because it's like, oh, this is different content for us. So what if we also had a different release schedule? It'll be a Saturday show. That wasn't working. It's not getting the same promotion because I usually do these right before I start my work where I do the shares and schedule all the shares for the day on social media. And so they were kind of losing out on that. And I would just kind of randomly remember in the middle of the Saturday to promote that their podcast is out. So that is going to be every other Wednesday now. Thursdays, it's either a new episode of No Direction or an episode of Valiant. And then Friday is either Intrepid Heroes or No Direction Beyond or Geek Together.
Wow. It is a pretty full schedule then.
It is. We have missed most of our Geek Together recordings this year. And honestly, if everyone else's podcasting habits are like mine, that's okay. I don't want to overwhelm our audience. I want to give them a variety of options, which is why I like that we've got a little bit of Starfinder, a little bit of Pathfinder 1E, and a lot of Pathfinder 2E, which just makes sense. That also lines up with the popularity of the game. But it means that unless you're a fan of just the network and all of our content, and there are fans like that, you can pick and choose which of these shows you want to follow regularly, which... Like presenting is a good example of a show that I think people are more likely to cherry pick based on who the guest is or what the guest is known for. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yeah, otherwise people can self-curate the network content that we're putting out.
Now, you have, you're the director of logistics. That's yep. your title, I guess. And Param seems like the other big mover or shaker with the network.
Yes, what's he's the director of production.
Okay. And so can you talk about that split of responsibilities?
Yes, it's fairly organic. So I don't know exactly where one thing ends and one thing begins. I definitely know that Param will usually push technological advancements and things which we should be aware of. So he's the one that made us, well, not made us, but he's the one that came up with a plan for going live. And how and that really increased our visibility and increased our reliability, because it was not just where we're putting out a podcast on a set time of every other week. We were also now recording on a set time. We got a really good relationship out of Paizo with that, where they knew when to expect us to request an interview. Whereas before we were recording live, it would just be like, this is the release date. Anytime in the 2 weeks leading up to the release date that you're free for an interview. And that was just kind of a hassle. Whereas changing it to a set recording date every time made it so much easier and smoother, and set expectations that Paizo has been very happy to accommodate us for. So yeah, that's the kind of thing, like I said, we went from Slack to Discord, and that's because Discord had a lot of fan-facing interaction that we hadn't really had since the days of the Private Sanctuary forums, which again was one of the original goals of the site. And so moving our planning to Discord meant that the staff was constantly on Discord. And so when the fans were there posting, we could just scroll up to one of the other channels and interact with the fans. So that was a really good choice. Param keeps on top of what microphones everyone should be having. Whenever we start a new actual play, we make sure that the cast gets the actual play podcaster kit. And that comes out of our Patreon budget. So yeah, that is a lot of Param's side of it. And of course, he will also suggest like topics that he is interested in and therefore things that we should pursue. But usually if he suggests a topic, we'll discuss it up until the point that the then planning for that episode jumps over to me. And so that's my strength. I'm the one that does a lot of the planning. I'm the one that it's like, okay, we've got this idea. Does that feel like an hour and a half of content? Okay, good. So here's the guests we want. Here's the backup. If they're not available, do we switch topics or do we delay until they are available? That kind of thing. So I do a lot of the one-to-one interaction with people that we're planning with, and a lot of the people management of the staff. Param does a lot of the technical side, but there is some overlap, although it's more Param overlapping onto my side than me overlapping onto the technical side.
All right. One last question about the network, and this is probably maybe one of the more interesting ones. How did you get such a tight relationship with Paizo, I guess?
Well, like I said, we were there from the beginning. So when Paizo was first promoting the mere concept of Pathfinder, here we were saying, hey, we're a podcast. Here's what a podcast is. And we want to dedicate a month of our weekly podcast to Pathfinder and promoting it and figuring out what it is. And so we had in that first Pathfinder month that we released, we had an episode about PaizoCon and why it's so cool. We had Tim Nightingale on, who helped found PaizoCon, and it was like, he was a great person to promote it. And the reason that I am going to PaizoCon regularly is because of that first PaizoCon episode that we did. And so, yeah, we have definitely helped get people into PaizoCon, helped legitimize PaizoCon as a convention and as a place to go to if you are a Pathfinder fan. And we had Jason Bowman was the fourth person of the four guests we had. We also had James Sutter, who was doing a lot of early development. Like before developer was one of the main positions at Pathfinder, at Paizo, he was one of their developers. And so he had a lot of influence as a developer. And we had James Jacobs, who of course did the campaign setting. The Galarian is James Jacobs' home game turned into something much larger than I'm sure he ever imagined it to be. And so, yeah, so in that first month in 2008, before Pathfinder was a game, so it was just in alpha or beta playtest at the time, we were already promoting it. And so then No Direction became a regular thing, and we didn't actually have Paizo guests on too often, because at the time it was just a crunch focused show and a community focused show. And so the idea of having a Paizo guest on every month, I didn't even consider that. But that's basically what we're doing at this point. Like there are some months where we have a non-Paizo guest or no guest at all. But if we really did want a Paizo guest on every episode, we have that kind of access. And Paizo has always been really happy to work with us for that. the relationship has really improved over the last couple of years when we started. I guess maybe it's more than the last couple of years. So from the first PaizoCon that I went to, which was in 2011, I brought a hand recorder, put it on the table, asked if we could record some of the seminars. It was really just the ones I was already attending as a ticketed guest. They approved it. I posted it to the website. And then Parham did the same thing at Gen Con. And that just snowballed into what we do now of live coverage of the entire digital side of their convention. We host their Gen Con and their PaizoCon feeds. And this is actually a paid position, which is the one time of the year, or I guess the two times of the year, where No Direction becomes, you know, an entity that works for Paizo and actually like does full work for them and podcasts for them professionally.
Yeah, that's quite a relationship to have developed, you know, for, you know, a fan kind of facing site that talks about the product to be able to work so closely with the company. I think that's really great to have developed that. And the Paizo folks, I've had the opportunity to meet dozens of them and do interviews and whatnot. And they all seem really, really nice folks.
I agree. There's very few Paizo staffer that at any point I was like, ooh, I don't particularly like this person. And none of them work at Paizo right now. So from my personal experience, I've never had a bad experience with a person that works at Paizo.
So can you tell me a little bit how you were able to parlay your podcast work into game design and writing?
So it ended up being the greatest con I never intended to make, because I would have these people on that it's like, hey, you've published a game or you are working full time in the game industry. What's that like? What are the things that you are like? What are the steps that you had to take to get into this position? And I was positioning myself as like I was getting personally tutored in how to get a game design job. And I was putting it out there. It wasn't actually a con. This was content that I was making available. It helped promote them. It helped promote everybody. Everybody wins. I just won on a couple of extra layers that I wasn't expecting, where they were just giving me a lot more confidence in what was expected, what the job actually looks like. Because before I started interviewing people about what game design was, I just assumed it wasn't something that relied so much on freelancers. It was just this office full of people working on the game. They are, you know, the Pathfinder people, the Dungeons & Dragons people, whoever. And so it gave me a better idea of what the industry actually is and what goes into a product, which is, you know, super important, because I think people forget what pre-internet knowledge we had about the entertainment industry and how mystifying it was. And I include role-playing games and just every level of it. And so to be one of the early people that was just interviewing people about what made that industry and how it worked, it was fascinating and super informative. And also getting all those recordings from PaizoCon and Gen Con, like I could have just done like a quick edit job to make sure there were no gaps, but I would sit down and I would listen to every single one when I was editing it, because this was valuable information, really interesting to me. And so that eventually got me connections with people like Kobold Press, so Wolfgang Bauer, who was putting out Kobold Quarterly under the Open Design. I think the company's name used to be Open Design. Now it's Kobold Press. So some of my early freelance came because Wolfgang Bauer was the first person in the game industry I ever interviewed. And he said, like, these are the steps to getting published in Kobold Quarterly. I followed those steps and I got Flying Gnomish Contraptions published in Kobold Quarterly. And I've had four or five other articles basically every other month. Every other issue, which was a quarterly magazine. So, you know, every 6 months, I was getting a new article published and I had full access to him to pitch my ideas for different articles. And it was great. And it was a really important relationship in getting me gaming design credits, gaming design experience. And likewise with Four Winds Fantasy Gaming, they were one of the first people that we interviewed for No Direction. And afterwards, just in like chatting, I was like, you know, I had this idea for a full source book and I pitched it to them and they approved it and they published it. And that became Strategists and Tacticians, which was a major undertaking for somebody with so little game design experience. I wrote a lot of words for that company and that book, and it really helped establish myself as a game designer and gave me a lot of experience. So around the time that I became a fan of Looking for Group, which was one of the webcomics published by Blind Fair and Entertainment, and discovered that not only were they a local Montreal company, but that I actually had friends who worked there. That was a great opportunity to get out of the teaching career that I was not happy with. And I did that by pitching them the idea of converting the Looking for Group, which was already a fantasy setting and based on like a lot of parody of World of Warcraft. So it already had a lot of gaming tropes in it. And I said, what if we take that same sense of humor, but put it in a game? And it's a fully functional game, but it can read as just an entertainment product, or it's a box set. So if this is, if you haven't played Dungeons & Dragons in a while, this might be a throwback product for you. This will be a good opportunity to get people interested in Pathfinder, to be interested in this product because it was Pathfinder compatible, and that was a built-in audience. And so, like, I presented this whole pitch to Ryan Sommer, the president of Blind Fighter Entertainment, and it was such an amazing pitch because I was approaching it from so many different angles, and those angles I had learned through interviews for the No Direction Network, that he signed me right away. He gave me exactly the money I asked for, which made me feel like I hadn't asked for enough money. and I did that project, sent it in as a freelancer, and then it just kind of sat there in their, you know, in their databases for a year without being worked on. And so I eventually convinced Ryan that I will take any job to work at Blind Ferret because I want to get out of teaching. I want entry. I want entrance into their company and that industry. And I very quickly realized that the people that were working on projects did not have the same experience I did just from podcasting and just from the few credits I had with product development. So even though I just went in there as a data entry, basically, yeah, just doing data entry and verifying spreadsheets and whatever on the media side, on the advertising side of that company, I eventually got assigned developing the product that I had worked for them as a freelancer and pitched. And getting that actually produced and published and selling well. And that led to me doing not just writing for the company, but product design, which was super fun for me. That is something that I did not know I had a talent for, but knew it was definitely an interest of mine. So I was pitching t-shirts. I was pitching basically anything that interested me as a fan of Looking for Group. So the first step would be like, here's an idea for a product. And then when they would get approved, it's like, now I need to figure out how to make them. And it was so much fun. And I learned so much from that job that then it helped me realize things about how I should be running the network. Like the reason that I'm so into consistency is that Looking for Group publishes a new page every Monday and every Thursday. Least I can do. The other comic they put out publishes 6 days a week. And it's always there in the morning. And that reliability is a large part of building and maintaining audience. And I was like, I definitely need to do that. I need to make sure it's not just you can expect a podcast on this day, but you also need to be able to expect it at the same time. And if people are used to reading our blogs on their lunch break, we need to make sure that our blogs are up every morning so that when they get to their lunch break, it's there for them. And it could be part of their routine and we become part of their day.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you take that and now you're working for Laughing Dragon Studios, which is a subsidiary?
Yes. So Blind Ferret is an interesting company in that, like I said, it's got an advertising side. And a lot of the reason that we could take a lot of risks on the entertainment side is as resources for the entertainment side. So if we get a big advertiser and we're like, yes, we could absolutely provide you an original animated commercial for your app or whatever, we need to have an animation studio to do that. And since we're not going to be constantly getting demand for animated ads for apps, then that animation studio just has to do other things in the meantime that will potentially make the money because we'll get these giant windfalls, these big paychecks, and that will support the studio. But if we also have creative projects going on, then the studio could support itself instead of relying on the ad side. So when we decided that physical products were not working for us, like physical merchandise was not working for us at Blind Ferret anymore for a combination of reasons. One is that we put out a lot of products in a short amount of time. And so we kind of saturated our audience, but then also conventions got bigger and bigger in the time that I was working at Blind Ferret. And so just the room that geeks and gamers had for stuff was limited. And so now people who might be a fan of our comic couldn't also buy our action figure and our board games and every t-shirt we put out. And so we decided we're going to close down the warehouse, stop doing physical products, And there I was as the guy who was designing the products that were going into that warehouse. So I was brought over to Laughing Dragon Studios, which is our animation branch. And it's just basically constantly pitching new ideas that could be turned into animated series and films, whatever. And we are constantly applying for different grants and pitching to different large networks to potentially get some of our original content aired, which we are getting a lot of traction on. But also we have, from the other side, people like production companies in need of animators are coming to us. And then I have done a lot of punch up work so that I am improving scripts and I am making sure that the scripts that we are turned over are formatted correctly because I have a formal degree in screenwriting and creative writing. But also that if we as a studio are better at certain things or worse at certain things, to make sure the things we're good at are worked into the script, the things that we're bad at are worked out of the script. And then we end up with the best possible combination of what we're good at and what the client wants.
Wow. So it sounds like that the initial theater work and your creative writing degree really paid off then in the long run.
Yes. So my original vision for myself as a professional was one day I will write movies and that will be my job. I will write them, send them to Hollywood. Hollywood will pay me and I will get to continue to write movies. And I produced a couple of the plays. I mounted them myself. And so I was had a lot of creative control and a lot of power. And it was a very small group. You basically have your actors, which in my case was never more than three, I don't believe. And then the director and the stage manager. And so, you know, it was a nice tight group. And that was a fun experience. But there's only so much money you can make in theater. They were paying for themselves and more than just paying for themselves, like the actors and the stage manager and the director thought they were volunteering their time and I was paying for it. And so potentially they would end up at a, you know, zero loss and I would end up at some loss. We were actually making enough money that I could pay them some money. And we basically spread the profits, even though like that wasn't part of the idea, but that wasn't part of the agreement, but that is something that I felt really strongly about. And so, the first couple of plays that I mounted worked out pretty well for me. And then I managed to get a contact just through random Facebook messaging for another student film that I was working on because I had gone back to get a film editing credit. I was just taking a night class just to get a little film editing under my belt. And my film editing group agreed that, okay, we're going to do Ryan's idea for a script. And so now we need actors. And so I just went on Facebook, looked for anyone with an interest in acting in Montreal, and sent them the same form letter of like, hey, we're looking for an actor to do a project. Are you interested? And one of them just happened to be a professional actor who also produces a lot of his own things just to, you know, boast his credits and have creative control. And so we got to talking and yeah, it became his short film product for that project for that summer. And it was there when we were working on a much larger set and with people that had actually worked professionally that I was like, I don't like this experience. This is, it's just, there's a lot of mini power struggles. There's a lot of just stuff that I am not interested in. And so at the time I was already on, I worked at schools and at summer camps and whatnot for years as just like, this is my part-time job, which also gives me a lot of freedom to write and to work on projects. So at the time that this short film didn't work, that's when I went full in and said like, fine, I've got all this working with kids experience, I might as well become a teacher, which is the wrong motivation to become a teacher. I hated that job more than I hated being on the short film set, but at least it gave me summers off and a little, and just like the drive to make sure I can make something happen that is full-time writing or at least more creatively satisfying. And so that is how I went from, you know, the theater and my original plan to game design. It was not a direct line, but it was just kind of like an accumulation of different odd jobs that more or less had some overlap that I managed to kind of work into an actual career that should not exist. I am the ideas guy at a company that makes cartoons, and that is not a role that most animation studios have.
Yeah, no, that actually sounds like it's the best job because you just get to throw out ideas.
It really is. Well, so the thing is, I don't just throw out ideas. I say, here's the idea. Here's why. Here's ways we can go with it. And when they have follow-up questions, I've already got a whole series Bible in my head. I just haven't written it down yet because we're not at that stage. And so once the pitches get shortlisted, then I can expand on those. And it's just a great, like, here's a million ideas. Okay, here's 10. Here's 10 super fleshed out ideas. All right, so we're focusing on one. Here's where we go with this one. And it's creatively satisfying. It's really engaging. And the pitching is the most fun part because I have gotten a pitch down really well. And I make it a whole experience so that the people that are in there are having fun. They're not just waiting for the next one to go. They are excited.
Wow. Sounds a lot like game development too. Big parts of that process. So, well, I do have a question then. So if you were to give advice to somebody who wanted to get into podcasting or maybe RPG design and writing, other than interviewing developers and getting all the secrets, which is kind of what I do, based on what you said, I when you were talking about that, I thought, wow, that's really similar to what I've been doing with presenting here. What advice do you have for people, though, that want to get in?
So to get into podcasting, I don't even know. it's so different from when I got into podcasting. And like, it's been kind of just such an organic path. And a lot of it is just stuff that worked out perfectly in our favor. Like, if fourth edition was super popular and just not for us, we would be a completely different thing. Or if Wizards of the Coast had worked a little more closely with its licensees like Paizo, and they didn't feel the need to produce their own game so that they didn't go bankrupt as a company or have to lay people off, then we wouldn't have Pathfinder to glom onto. And I would have just played 3.5 Dungeons and Dragons forever and actually had that original website. So many things worked out, and like, Paizo and us clicked so early on, and like a game like Pathfinder to have a dedicated podcast to it at launch is unheard of. It's not something that happens now. It's not something that ever really happened unless it was something that the company itself was curating and paying for. And it just happened, and we lucked out and it worked out in everybody's favor. So I really cannot say like what I did as a podcaster that could be replicated. I even tried. I at one point had an idea for a blog called Blogcasting, and it was just going to be a blog about how to get into podcasting. And after the first few articles, it's like, I have no advice. I just have a very specific path that no one else can recreate. It will never happen again, what happened to me. However, getting into game design is much, much easier. And I don't even have to tell you what to do. I could just point to you to any of the many how to get into game design recordings we had from the seminars from Gen Con and PaizoCon. You know, start with the most recent ones, and they'll tell you, submit to Wayfinder. They'll tell you, do a blog so that you can prove that you are reliable and are putting out regular content. So even if you have no audience, if you have a blog that says updated at a consistent day, a consistent schedule, and puts out a certain number of words, like, that consistency, regardless of your audience, is a skill. And it is a skill that is super valuable for publishing companies. And if those articles also just happen to be good, even better for you and for everybody.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that Jessica Catalan, also from Canada.
Yep. Other side of Canada, though.
Yeah. She's that's how she got her start with Paizo, is they came across her blog. She was doing reviews of different D20 games, and they just liked what she was doing. They asked her to do some writing for them.
Yeah. D20 Diaries. I am a fan.
Yeah. All right. So, important question. So, you've mentioned being around Montreal. I have not been there in a long time, maybe about 20 years. I was actually in Quebec for the 350th anniversary of the city. I do recall that they really like speaking French there. So how's your French?
My French is adequate. It's not great. Like, I, for someone who has been immersed in the city and was in French immersion program all through elementary school and in the beginning of high school, and then halfway through eighth grade, when I was failing, they were like, why are you in the more French program if you are failing French class? So then I went into the English program, and you know, that I got by from then on. And I took my last French class in CGEF, which is kind of like college. It's somewhere between high school and university for us, because we end high school in 11th grade. And since then, my French has just deteriorated, and I regret it, but it's not like I ever had the skill. And that's
so why?
Why? Because learning a language is hard.
No. Why are they so Francophile there, I guess?
Because the population is 70% French, because when settlers originally came, the French and the English both settled in Quebec. And the English moved on to Upper Canada, which is now where Ontario is. And the French kind of stayed in the Quebec region. And so there's just the French culture that's been here has been here for 500 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what's interesting, I taught a summer in Denmark, and I had students from all over the world there. I had a couple of guys from Quebec, and I had a couple of gals from Paris. And, you know, I'd always heard how the French, especially in Quebec, are, you know, they're just really in, you know, speak the language and all this kind of stuff. The girls from Paris could not understand their French.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you have, you know, someone from Alabama talking to someone from Scotland.
Yes.
Both speak in English, but
right.
Very different versions of English. So yeah, Quebec... the Quebec version of French is some kind called joual. And I'm told that that's not a nice way of referring to it. I don't know what it means other than that's the only word I've ever heard applied to it other than French. But yeah, it's the Quebecois French is its own beast. It's evolved in its own direction for 500 years and isolated. It's the French chunk of a giant continent of English speakers for the most part. Like there's Spanish kind of spread out, but like the amount of French that's in North America is really concentrated in Quebec. And so it's just kind of become its own version of the language. But yeah, I can relate to that because I remember when a French movie called Amelie, I think it was like something like The Incredible Journey of Amelie or something, was really popular. And this is French from France. And so I was like, all right, I'll check this out. My expressive French is not great, but my receptive French has always been fine and passable. And I was listening to it, and it's like, I don't understand a word they're saying. Is my French that much worse than I realized? But no, this was just really my first exposure to French from France. And really realizing just how accented it is compared to ours, or I guess how accented Quebec French is compared to France French.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what's next for Ryan? What are some cool things you're working on here?
So much, none of which I can tell you about. And I really mean so much. Like, as weird as it is, 2020 has been one of my best years professionally. Some of the projects I'm working on are dream projects for me. And I cannot say to anyone, to anywhere. I can tell you that I will have a credit air on CBC, which is the Canadian broadcast company, by way of Laughing Dragon. Something I've worked on is airing in across Canada. And there's a lot of really interesting opportunities and other projects that I've pitched for Laughing Dragon. And also, I've got some other freelance work coming up, not all of which is for Paizo. That's really exciting. And again, I cannot talk about.
All right. What about the network? Anything exciting on the network you can talk about?
Oh, that's a good question. I have been talking a lot about potential podcasts in the Private Sanctum, the after show that we do after every live episode of No Direction. And I've just kind of realized that one of the things I'm doing with my isolation is coming up with podcast concepts and not just like, here's a cool name or here's a cool idea. It's like I was talking about when I pitch projects at work. Here's a cool podcast concept. Here is how I would execute it. Here is the first year of content. One of the ones I was talking about that I've accepted is just not going to happen. It was called Fame-ish. And it was just talking to people that are not quite famous, but are famous enough that there are times where they are the most famous person in the room. And so that would be one of the go-to questions. It's like, all right, if we know the idea of A-list, B-list celebrities, what alphabet letter are you? And let's say you are the most famous person in the room. How many other people are in the room? What are you famous for? What would they know you for? That kind of thing. And I have a whole list of like, these are people that I'm within 2 degrees of that I could populate this entire first year of this show with. but I have to do it then. And I don't have time for a whole other episode or a whole other podcast that's separate from what I am already doing for the network. So things that are exciting coming from the network, consistency, more of the same. You will see more of No Direction. You will see more of the interviews that we've been doing, especially in the last 4 or 5 months. We've done a lot of things that are unusual for our format or the episode. And I think I like them. I think that we've broken into a new type of interview that I want to pursue more of, which is just kind of a little more hodgepodge or a little less obvious of the guest and topic, and then a really fun way of exploring it. So that's a good way to bring back guests that instead of just having the same interview we had 3 years ago, but having them back on because we haven't talked to them in 3 years, having them on, doing like a quick recap of what we talked about 3 years ago, what they're up to now. And now let's dive into that topic. So I never saw No Direction as the topical Pathfinder podcast. In fact, that's one of the reasons that I wanted Legend Lore on the network, was to have a topical podcast for Pathfinder second edition. And of course, Digital Divination, we wanted the same thing for Starfinder. Mm-hmm. And Pathfinder was going to be news, reviews, and interviews. But now it's kind of becoming a little bit more topical, but not the kind of topics that they cover on Legend Lore. So you can expect more of that. That's the direction we are ending the year and the direction we're going to pick up 2021. And I don't want to say that there's going to be more growth, because like I said, we're almost at 30 people, which is almost 10 more people than Param was comfortable with. And I don't want to grow just for the sake of growing. I never have. Actually, one thing that we might do more of is we did that Beatles and Grimms partnership, which was mm-hmm. one part advertising and one part just like, this is a cool thing. We want to promote it a lot. And that went really well. And so people have been approaching us with other opportunities like that. So we may see more things like that where it's not quite advertising. It's just geeking out about something really specific that is going on that people can, you know, get behind a Kickstarter, a new product, something that is Pathfinder adjacent still, but on a level that we did not previously explore.
Very cool. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, John. This was fun.